This is Jim Eagster. Coming today on the show, we'll talk with Attica Locke. She's the author of The Cutting Season and this year's recipient of the Ernest J. Gaines Literary Award. She will be honored tonight in our city. And we'll talk with Attica Locke about her remarkable voyage as a writer. Also, Louisiana has 250,000 fewer white Democrats today than it did 10 years ago. Mary Landrieu faces re-election with fewer Democrats in Louisiana. Can she win, as she has three times before? We'll talk about it with Gus Weil, the veteran political consultant, and also get his take on the entry of David Bruce Vitter, the other U.S. Senator from Louisiana, into the governor's election for next year. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. J.C. Kane is producing. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It's 877-217-5757. In just a bit, we'll hear from Attica Locke, this year's recipient of the Ernest J. Gaines Literary Award, and we will talk with her about her voyage as a writer and her book, The Cutting Season. But first, it's Gus Weil, the longtime Louisiana political consultant who's been doing his thing since 1958. And he is here to talk about a few different things, including the aspirations of our two U.S. senators. One wants re-election, the other wants to be governor. But first of all, what's on your mind today?
Jim, I just heard a news bulletin on CNN that Justin Bieber was arrested in Miami for driving under the influence and speeding. And if I were the judge and he was found guilty, of course he has not been found guilty, but if he were, I would sentence him to regularly scheduled haircuts for a year.
Well, okay, he's arrested for DWI, which is, of course, serious business, drag racing, and resisting arrest. By the way, DWI is a serious business, and the Baton Rouge Advocate, to its credit, prints the names of the transgressors and in the newspaper. But you know, the media, they'll pile on somebody like Mary Landrieu's son, who got one a few months ago, made it front page news. And then there are other people who are in politics at high levels who get DWIs, and there's no story about it. Well, how do you figure?
There's something wrong there, and I wasn't aware of that happening. I know that the prominent people in my time, they were absolutely in the Advocate, and I think that being in the Advocate was one of the main things that kept a lot of folks from driving intoxicated.
And I must say, the Advocate on occasion has printed stories about its own people getting DWIs.
So that is correct.
That is correct. Well, on the Senate race, David Vitter has never been arrested, to my knowledge, but he does have some baggage, and now he wants to be governor, and that baggage is being open for public consumption and scrutiny once again. Does it really matter?
Well, you know, Jim, there's a great difference in running for the United States Senate, which is kind of distant and protected because of that distance, and running for governor, where there is no distance. You are among the electorate. And what he's going to find, to his chagrin, is that people are going to, in Louisiana, are going to ask him a lot of questions about past activities, and I'm not sure that he's going to want those questions gone into.
But do the people really care? If there's nothing new, it's been 7 years, does it really matter?
It matters with the kind of people that he wants to attract. And a lot of people, you'd be surprised, have not heard of his problems. Many have. But many have not, because time cleanses everything, allegedly. But I believe he's going to have to answer some terrible questions about Washington madams. And then the main reason that a lot of people will be against him.
Well, my guess, Gus, is that David Vitter, whether he's elected governor or U.S. president, which I think is his ultimate ambition, will never answer any questions about this, that he'll go to his grave with some mystery about this subject. And if he were a private citizen, that would be one thing, but as a public official, Is it a necessity to go into depth about this kind of stuff?
Yes, absolutely. The person who puts his or her name up for our decision, our vote, owes us an explanation about their life and everything that has transpired within that life. All secrecy is off the table when you ask me for my vote.
Now, that hasn't always been the case. My friend Jack Germond, who was on this show many times and died last year, he said once that he saw George Wallace coming out of a hotel room with a woman who was not his wife, and he could have written a story about that, but in those days, those kinds of things were not fair game in the
eyes of
the...
That is exactly right, and the news wasn't instant in those days. We might learn about something 2 days later or a week later, but now with those little telephones with cameras built in, everything is instantaneous. And there's another angle.
What's that?
Television, I'm thinking of CNN and the other, networks, they have to have product to fill those 24 hours a day. And I think very often that comes into play. That they need product. They need something to put on the air. And the missteps of our public officials is a ripe subject.
It is, but on the other hand, David Vitter was accused of consorting with prostitutes as far back as 2002. In fact, I was doing a show when it happened the first time with a guest saying that he had knowledge of this. It took 5 years. And the man who ultimately broke the story was not Rupert Murdoch. It was not the writers and investigative reporters at the New York Times or CBS or any of the big media entities, the Wall Street Journal. They were not there. It was Larry Flint. And Larry
Isn't
Flint,
that interesting?
Yeah, yeah, Larry Flint did it by hiring a guy named Dan Moldea, who meticulously went through this Washington Madam's phone records, got the numbers, cross-checked them, and there was David Vitter. Now, why weren't the media, both national and local, and I would hold myself in that group, too, as a local media person, why weren't we doing that instead of Larry Flint?
I have no idea. I know that Larry Flint, I remember when he undertook this reign of terror, journalistic terror, when he decided to just expose every conservative who he felt be deserving of it, because they were giving him Hades, and that was how that came about.
And you know, he got no credit for this. He broke a big story.
Well, he got no credit because he was doing so many terrible things that he kind of balanced its way out. He just, it's very hard for people to accept him as the moral voice or judge of our time.
Really?
Larry Flint? I think Larry Flint was probably right on the verge of being what would be kindly called a sicko.
Okay. 297-5633 is your number. Gus Weil is the guest, and David Vitter would like to talk about other things, and the people of Louisiana certainly accepted his viewpoints as being ones they liked in 2010 when he was reelected to the U.S. Senate after the scandal broke. Here's Senator Vitter talking earlier this week with the Louisiana Radio Network about why he's doing this. Why is he running?
And excited about what we can do together to move us all forward in terms of education, economic development, political reform, budget stability, everything.
Does he have your vote, Gus Weil?
No, I'm going to vote for a Republican, though, but he doesn't have my vote. I'm going to vote for Darden, the lieutenant governor, who I do know and who is able and straight. So if I were a Republican, that's where I'd vote. Vitter is, you might notice, that there's not a lot there about the poor, the downtrodden, and the blacks and the minorities and food stamps. He doesn't have a whole lot to say about any of that, because in his entire Senate career, he has never voted with the underclass one time.
Well, he would say, they're not with me, so why should I vote with them?
Well, if they were with him, they ought to be interdicted. I think he's a hater.
You do?
Yeah. I think that probably the main target of his hostility is our president.
Well, he won in 2010 when he sought re-election for the U.S. Senate by largely running against President Obama.
Yes.
Used Obama as a...
But Louisiana's no judgment meter. Louisiana has gotten to be, I guess, we're among the most conservative states in the nation. I remember a time when the Democrat Party was at least represented by good men and women, but now a Democrat is an anomaly.
Well, there are 250,000 white Democrats fewer in Louisiana now than there were 10 years ago. There's a fine editorial from The Advocate today. I think this one was most likely written by Lanny Keller. And 250,000 in a state with 2.9 million voters, that's a big portion of the electorate. You know,
That's a big portion of the electorate, and that has pretty well kissed goodbye to Democratic aspirations.
Does it make Mary Landrieu's quest for a fourth term daunting?
She may squeak through because she has such political connections. First, she will get the Democrat vote. She will get the black vote. She will get a vote delivered to her by her brother, who's mayor of New Orleans. So she and she's a seniority. So I think she's probably the last Democrat with an honest-to-goodness chance to be reelected.
People tend to vote the way they have in the past, and she has been on the ballot a long time. After all, she was elected treasurer in 1987, reelected in 91, then ran a close race for governor in 95, and now three terms as a U.S. senator. So there are people out there, Gus, who have probably cast ballots for her six times.
I agree with that.
So how does a candidate, let's say if she's in a runoff with Congressman Cassidy, how does he change that inertia?
I don't know, but I can tell you that we get used to voting for certain people, absolutely, and it becomes an almost automatic response when we get in the voting booth. I think when we get in the voting booth, there's a moment of panic. There's usually a long line behind us awaiting their turn. And I think when that panic is present, that condition of being hurried, I think our tendency, and only a psychologist could really answer this, I think is to go ahead and go with the familiar, which is, of course, Mary Landrieu.
297-5633. A bit more time with Gus Weil. Dez in South Downs. Good morning, Dez.
Hey, good morning, Jim, and good morning, Mr. Weil. I hasten to come to the defense of Larry Flint. Larry Flint was not holding himself up as an example of a Christian or moral or whatever set of values that the Republicans pretend to uphold. He was pointing out a hypocrite when he pointed to David Vitter, because David Vitter holds himself up as the Christian family values guy, and he gets caught with his hand in the forbidden cookie jar. That's what Larry Flint was doing.
All right. What about Larry Flint pointing?
What did she say?
I couldn't hear everything she said either. But she was talking about Larry Flint was pointing out hypocrisy.
Oh, that's what I said.
And that
also,
Larry Flint may be a lot of things, but he's not a hypocrite.
No, he's not a hypocrite, but I don't know why. He's not my ideal any kind of a person who ought to be put on a statue.
Have you ever seen his office on Wilshire Boulevard, Gus?
No, I never have.
Oh, it's magnificent.
Yeah. Is that book still being published?
Which one? Hustler?
His magazine.
Hustler magazine, as far as I know.
I don't know.
I'm not a subscriber, but as far as I know, it's still being published.
I was trying to trap you. you're a little too slick for me.
297-5633. Back in 90 seconds with Gus Weil, and then we'll hear from the fabulous Attica Locke. This is Minkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. In a few minutes, we'll hear from Attica Locke, the spectacular writer who is this year's recipient of the Ernest Gaines Literary Award. She'll be honored tonight, downtown Baton Rouge. But we'll spend a bit more time with the fabled political consultant, Gus Weil, who is a man who follows national and local politics, as he has for over 50 years. 297-5633 if you'd like to join the conversation in our remaining time with Gus Weil. We haven't talked to you, Gus, since Chris Christie ran into
That's
all
right.
his problems.
You know, I like Chris Christie. I thought he was so different. He wasn't one of those nutty ultra-conservatives. And a lot of people never forgave him because he dared to work with President Obama when his state was desperate for help after Hurricane Sandy. I think that Chris Christie, though, is he's getting worn down pretty much by each of these new divulgings. And obviously he was not quite the sterling white knight on a horse that I hoped he was. However, do I think he has a chance to be the Republican nominee? Absolutely. I think the Republican nominee will be either him or Jeb Bush.
Today there's a story, it's a national story, almost a $5 billion surplus in California under the leadership of their governor, Jerry Brown. He is now talking about running for president. He's 75 years old. Is he too old, Gus?
Absolutely. I've given up my aspirations, and the reason is old age. And, of course, I'm older than him, but no, he's too kooky to be a president.
Oh, come on. I don't think that's a fair assessment of the man.
A little bit kooky.
He looks like he's in better shape than most of the people who are younger than he who are seeking the presidency.
You know, there's been one interesting thing about him. He has never been married, huh?
No, he's married now.
He got married?
He got married in 2006 to a beautiful woman.
Really?
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I might have to reconsider him then.
Well, what's wrong with never being married?
No, no, but I was just talking about how he was not the norm by American socioeconomic standards.
Well, maybe we need somebody who's not part of the norm.
Well, it suddenly occurs to me, you might announce. I may be talking to the choir.
Well, I think Jerry Brown has a little better shot than I do. 297-5633. Greg in Catahoula. Greg, you're on with...
Oh, Jim and Gus. Jim, you seem to be implying that, back to David Vitter, that we shouldn't, that it's not relevant anymore, that David Vitter did his prostitution activities several years ago. If I kill somebody in 2002 and I kill somebody else in 2007, but I haven't killed anybody in the last 5 or 6 years, don't you think we should consider the fact that I did those things back then? I mean, how can it not be relevant?
You make a good point, but you're equating prostitution with murder.
No, not at all.
Well, sure you are.
Do that. It's a crime, but we shouldn't forget it. And he was a criminal. He admitted it. I wonder. I'd like to ask Gus, as a political expert, how can women possibly vote for this man? Considering his character, and his character hasn't changed because he hadn't been arrested in the last 5 or 6 years. We know what his character is like. How can women vote for this man?
Well, someone pointed out, I'll pass this along because it is accurate, and I think it is worthy of discussion, that even though Senator Vitter has not been charged with a crime, he was convicted in civil court of assaulting a woman, Mercedes Hernandez.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So he does have that on his record.
That seems to indicate a certain character is alive and active there, and I don't see why we should forget it.
Okay, Greg.
Thank you.
He's going to. The thing about it is, as I said at the very beginning of this interview, he's going to have to answer every question over and over and over. It's something we demand of gubernatorial candidates, as well we should. We put them in that mansion. We treat them like a god. So we, the people, have a right to ask people about their past and their record. That's a part of his life. And he's going to have to answer to those things. Is it enough to defeat him? No. But it's enough that if he's in a close race, he could defeat him.
Well, getting back to Greg, and he did equate prostitution with murder. To my knowledge, there are very few murderers who have been successful in American politics, but there have been a lot of men who have been acquainted with prostitutes who have been elected to offices, and I would imagine some are serving right now as we speak, believe it or not, Gus Weil.
I would imagine you're 100% right. The nature of man is not angelic, and I'm sure that many a man is guilty of what you're talking about.
But I had Bernie Pinsonat on this show a few years ago, and he said that Mary Landrieu would survive a scandal of this kind just like David Vitter. You know as well as I do that if she got caught consorting with prostitutes, it would be all over.
Yeah, I'm not sure this our male-dominated electorate would forgive that in a woman. You're correct.
Well, why shouldn't they if we forgive it for David Vitter?
It's again, I go back to a cliche, it's the nature of the beast, us. Here in Louisiana, we're not quite there yet.
We
can forgive it in a man. Good old boy, slap him on the back, wink at him, chuckle. But a woman, something else again.
Well, women are held to a much higher standard. For example, we would not elect a woman who is heavy as Chris Christie to be a governor or a U.S. president. We wouldn't do it.
We certainly sent him to the Senate, though, because Mary Landrieu is no lightweight anymore. And neither is Senator Mikulski,
they're not in the class with Mr. Christie. Mr. Christie is morbidly obese.
Yeah.
Dangerously so.
I don't think it'll hurt him, though. And I want to tell you, I think, too, that, as I said, unless Jeb Bush declares, I think Governor Christie will be the Republican nominee.
You do?
Yep.
Despite this?
Yeah. Despite that.
Well, you know, I don't think it'll be the bridge scandal that'll undo him. It's the hug that he gave to President Obama. That's going to be not sit well with some Republicans.
That would be the thing that would keep him from the nomination. You're correct. His problem is going to be, I think a lot of Democrats would vote for Christie, but I think a lot of Republicans wouldn't for that very reason. How dare he befriend the President of the United States when he went to it for help, which that state needed, horrible.
297-5633, just a few more minutes with Gus Weil, if you'd like to get in before the finish line with the veteran political consultant who led John McKithen to victory as governor. 50 years ago this month, John McKithen beat Chep Morrison in a primary for governor. We had a primary in January of 64. Why was that, Gus? I was a kid so young, I don't remember why we held an election.
I don't remember either. I really don't. You know, we're talking about a half century. I do not remember.
The only thing
I remember is it, when he took office. I remember that.
Yes.
John in Lafayette. John, yeah, you're on with Gus.
Okay, Mr. Weil, Jim, I heard what Greg said about equating the prostitution to murder. I agree with you all. It's not quite the same. However, Mr. Vitter has always presented himself as above the average person as far as morality, as far as doing the so-called right thing. And that's been the key to his elections each time is his family values. And the fact that he has violated that so-called oath as to family values, I think is relevant to what we'll be considering when he runs for governor.
Well, John, if his wife doesn't care, why should we care?
Well, I don't know if she doesn't care. That's a good question. That's another whole subject. But I think that's his thing. You know, he had to pray over this for a month before he decided to run for governor. And if he's a moral man, as he says he is, that's just fine. But if he's not what he says he is, and based on his past performance, he may not be, then I think all of this is very relevant. It should be discussed during the campaign.
Well, maybe he's changed. People do change.
And many a wife has compromised, as has many a husband, their public beliefs. We don't know what goes on in the bedroom behind the cameras. But after all, the opportunity to be first lady, that's a heck of a thing. Run that mansion, all those all the help there, convicts running around. You might make a deal. Now, sometimes it doesn't come out for years. The best example I can think of was, as you call, Governor Spitzer of New York, whose wife stuck with him when he was caught.
Well, now she's left him, though.
And only recently has she left him. That is correct.
But, of course, he's no longer governor.
No, and not only that, but he lost his next election.
297-5633 is your number, and we're talking with Gus Weil for a few more moments, and we're going to wrap it up with Gus. But you've covered a lot of ground, Mr. Weil, and David Vitter. John is correct. Prayed about this decision for a month with his family. I suspect that they were in quiet seclusion discussing whether this is a good thing for the Vitter family. So is prayer something that is important in politics?
Well, it's used an awful lot in public relations. You always hear people refer to, as long as my wife says it's all right, then it's all right, But that's humbug, I think.
Okay. Well, but I would think on a major decision in one's life, if a person is a believer, that praying about it is not a bad thing.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I don't know if it's a truth, though, These people praying about things like activities with prostitutes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one thing that is almost a certainty is that when a candidate says he's praying about whether he should get in a race, he's going to get in the race. Evan on Jefferson Highway, please be brief. You're on with Gus Weil. Hi, Evan.
Yes, I had another David Vitter question. I just want to get your thoughts on seeing with the incident that he had with the prostitution. Do you think that his views on same-sex marriage to be hypocritical?
He's against same-sex marriage. Does that have anything to do with prostitution?
I don't know. I never thought of it, But I'm sure he's against same-sex marriage, against legalization of marijuana even for medicinal purposes. Let me sum up Vitter. What you're going to get, should Vitter be elected, is our present governor, part two. He will be continuation of the same. There will not be one deviation philosophically from him and from Jindal.
All right. Well, Scott writes, I refuse to be told by a man that has had multiple encounters with prostitutes while married that my same-sex relationship is immoral and should be illegal. The sanctity of marriage clearly means nothing to this man. Another listener, and we're going to wrap it up with this, Kristen writes that Senator Vitter is against abortion rights, and what would have happened had one of these prostitutes become pregnant?
That's a hell of a question. I don't know. But he, of course, is now, as far as the public is concerned, he's going to be a super moralist. So away to the right, as is Jindal. As I say, he'll just be part two. If you want 4 or 8 more years of Jindal, vote for Vitter.
Well, thank you, Gus Weil.
Thank you, Jim.
Appreciate it. Take care. And we're joined in studio by the fabulous Attica Locke. She'll be honored tonight. She is this year's Ernest J. Gaines recipient for literary excellence. The 7th annual Gaines Award is hers, presented tonight for the cutting season. She was with us a few weeks ago, and she is in studio. Hi, Attica.
Hi there. Thank you guys for having me. I don't know if I can follow prostitutes and Larry Flint, but I'll do my best.
Well, so yeah, we've talked about sex, which of course is an issue that is volatile and gets people excited and calling in and that sort of thing. But you write about the issues of race.
Yes.
Which, as we know, also have some hot points.
It does. I've been living in California for 20 years, and I have remarked that, I grew up in the South. And I have to say that for all of the South's contradictions, racial contradictions, for all the ways it disappoints me or surprises me. I do think that there are conversations about race here that are happening on a more frank level than in my liberal California. To be honest, as diverse as California is, there can be a kind of liberal squeamishness around acknowledging race and talking about it. Whereas, you know, I've had some great conversations just in the 3 days that I've been here that have been very frank and open between people of different backgrounds.
Well, the last time you were on the show, the only other time, you talked about your experience of attending a wedding at a plantation.
Yes. Yes, I went to a wedding at Oak Alley in 2004. And I knew the wedding was on a plantation because I saw the invitation, but I just assumed it was a plantation-like venue. I didn't know that what had been a working sugarcane plantation where slaves worked was now a wedding venue. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. And when I first saw Oak Alley, I was so blown away by its beauty and trying to hold the contradiction of its beauty against the ugliness of the history there. And so I was just so stunned by the place that I knew I had to write about it.
And that's the cutting season. But why is it difficult to put the past aside and celebrate the current beauty and somehow forget the tragedy of slavery?
Oh, I don't think it's difficult. I think people are successfully forgetting the past. I think the challenge is how do you acknowledge our progress while also acknowledging our past? How do we hold the contradiction of where we've been as a nation versus where we're going? And for me, you know, raising a daughter in the 21st century, I have said I'm highly invested in raising her in the country she's actually in, not the one I was raised in. And so I've got to figure out as her parent, what parts of her racial history or our nation's history must we always carry with us? And which parts of our history are we over-identifying with and it's preventing us from going forward?
Well, the book is The Cutting Season, and it starts with Karen Gray, who manages a sprawling antebellum plantation sitting between Baton Rouge and New Orleans. So this is something a lot of people can identify with, and this was motivated by you attending this wedding. And you said a lot of people of color were there, right?
It was a black woman and a white guy getting married. And that's my marriage. My husband is white. So, you know, when he and I got there, we kind of looked at each other like, well, our feeling was we waited all night for someone to say something about where we were. We thought that there would be a prayer said or a reading or something to acknowledge. Maybe tonight is about coming to this troubled ground and reclaiming it with love. Maybe that's what tonight is. But Jim, nobody said anything the whole night. It became very clear as the night went on that this had been chosen for what it looked like. And for this particular couple, the history had been completely just cut out of it. And I didn't understand how that was possible. And was that a sign of progress that we've come so far that we can just have parties here? Or was that an abomination?
Well, should the wedding have been there?
No. In my opinion, first of all, personally, on an interpersonal level, who starts a marriage on grounds of inequality? That this doesn't make any sense. But I also don't think these spaces should be rented out like a Hilton.
Well, the French Quarter, for example, it's a place where slavery was celebrated at one point. Should we not go to the French Quarter anymore?
Oh, look at you. Touché. Well, I hate the Quarter anyway.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge tonight at the Manship Theater. Attica Locke will be the recipient of the 7th Annual Ernest J. Gaines Award for Literary Excellence for her novel, The Cutting Season. And she is going to be there with the great Ernest Gaines, the native of Pointe-Coupee Parish, who has returned home. He's lived here for several years now with his beautiful wife, Diane, hopefully listening today. You met him.
I did. That was probably one of the highlights of my life.
You met him recently, right?
Yesterday, I had lunch at his home. He and his wife and his dog and cat, and we drank some bourbon at lunch and got to walk the grounds. he has, I have such respect for the way in which he is preserving his own personal history. And because his personal history so deeply overlaps with the history of Louisiana, he's doing something that I think is a gift to the entire state and, in my opinion, the nation. So at his house, you know, he went and bought a parcel of land on the old plantation where he and his family were sharecroppers and where they cut cane. And he has preserved the old schoolhouse and church and planted it, Jim, right in his backyard. And it was so incredible to see that juxtaposition about how far this young boy who cut cane has come and that he's willing to also hold the old plantation house and save it.
297-5633 is your number for Attica Locke. She made her debut with Blackwater Rising. It was a book that received amazing reviews. And now it's The Cutting Season, a riveting thriller that intertwines two murders separated across more than a century with our area, the backdrop. And when did you become familiar with Louisiana?
Well, you know, my people come from rural East Texas, and I have said before that I think Louisiana and rural East Texas are like fraternal twins. So I think there's something that's shared in their DNA. I used to come to Baton Rouge as a child. My aunt and uncle used to live here. My uncle's a retired oil man. And so they lived here, and I used to spend summers here. And but I will admit to having nerves about writing about a place that is not my native state. You know, Louisiana is its own thing, and I felt like, who am I to come in here and think I could have any kind of truth or wisdom about the place? But this award is certainly validation that maybe I got some of it right.
So let me get it right. You were born in Houston.
Born in Houston.
No graduate of Northwestern.
Yes.
In Chicago.
Exactly. And then I moved to Los Angeles. I've been in LA 19 years. Yeah.
That's a good place, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's grown on me. It's grown on me. It's a trip to raise a little girl who's a Californian. She's 7, my daughter. So that's kind of insane, thinking that her world is so different than the one I grew up in. She calls her teachers by their first name.
Really? They do that in California?
They do that in California.
Really?
They do.
297-5633. Reginald on College Drive. You're on with Attica. Hi, Reginald.
Hi, Jim. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Hey, just a quick comment. I like what your guest has said, especially when she talked about trying to live in the present as opposed to the past. But then she made a comment that going to the wedding at the plantation, she hoped someone would say something about this being a healing process. Maybe it's just the timing. Maybe they've already had that conversation. Maybe they've had it years ago, and it's no big deal. And I don't know when she went to the wedding, if it was recent or if it was, you know.
It was 2004. And by they, do you mean the couple had the conversation or the people who are running Oak Alley Plantation have had the conversation?
Well, whoever you were hoping would say something.
I was hoping that
that community has already had the conversation.
Well, now you raise a good point about that, but I'm going to tell you this. If you are in L.A. and you choose to have a wedding on a plantation in Louisiana, you ask me to buy a plane ticket and come and sit in it, you have invited me into it, and I would appreciate some acknowledgement about where we are. And you're right. That couple may have worked out all their issues. It, for me, was the first time I'd ever stepped on plantation grounds, and I found that having a wedding there where there were greeters dressed up as mammies to welcome us cheapened history.
Ah, okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you still there, Reginald?
Yes, I am.
Did she change your mind?
Well, in that sense, yes, in terms of how the greeters were dressed. But I'm a black man here in Baton Rouge, and I moved here 2 years ago. And I had some of the same issues myself when I saw plantations down on Highland Drive. And then I said, well, I've just came here. Maybe, you know, everyone else in the community has already had the conversation, and it's just something I need to get over in terms of my own
Reginald,
understanding and
You know what the problem is, Reginald, is that what the Oak Alleys of the world are selling is a sanitized history. So that it's one thing if everybody has personally worked through their issues, but as long as you are selling tickets to a sanitized history, when I went there for the first time, they had taken down all the slave cabins. And the entire tour at Oak Alley is about the china and the curtains in the main house, without talking anything about the real history of what held up this house. So as long as you're engaging in commerce around the history, then you have a responsibility to get it right.
That makes perfect sense. And I do applaud you, though, for also understanding that we do need to move past that and not live as much in the past. But I recognize it, but also move past. Because I had another friend who was vehement with me that there is still rampant racism. And I work with a lot of groups that there is no hint of that whatsoever, and that we're really fighting against. And there are just a lot of ideas that we really need to get past.
And the irony is that it's actually by honoring the past that you actually get past it. It's when you pretend and try and suppress it that it actually is still playing out in your unconscious. The way for us as a nation to move forward is to acknowledge what happened. Let's all have a good cry about it, but let's always acknowledge what it is and not sanitize it. And that way we really can heal and move forward.
Sure.
All right. Thank you, Reginald. The guest is Attica Locke. The Cutting Season is her book. She now lives in Los Angeles. She is in Louisiana, and her book has much of Louisiana and all its glory, its splendor, and its tragic past displayed in the prose from Attica Locke, who is now one of the rising stars in the literary world. It's one of those cases where you may have gotten overnight recognition, but it took a lot of time before occurred, didn't it?
It did. It only seems like a shooting star from the outside. Inside was a lot of days not knowing whether my first book would get published, certainly. But I had a hard time with this one, too. It's kind of a long slog. It was so incredible I flew into New Orleans on Monday and took a drive to Baton Rouge because I said I preferred that than some layover in Atlanta. And to pass the exit sign for Oak Alley and to remember how I struggled. And I came out here after that wedding and I stayed at Oak Alley. And I went around with Mr. Herman Wagasback of the American Sugarcane League. And he was trying to teach me everything about cane farming. And I didn't have a story. And I was struggling. And it's really something to think, you know, how far this book has come.
And you started as a script writer for movies.
I did. I was very good at getting paid lots of money to write movies that nobody wanted to make.
So what happens? You write scripts, and sometimes they make it, and sometimes probably in my case, most of the times they don't.
Yeah, the business model, and it shifted a little bit, but they spend a lot of money up front on what they call development. And so they buy a lot of scripts, they develop a lot of scripts, they adapt a lot of books. But when it comes time to what they call greenlight a movie, there has to be a certain alchemy that comes together. The right star is available because she's on break from her TV show, and this director is in between two other Batman sequels. It all has to kind of come together in a way that makes sense to write a check for, you know, $50, $60, $70, $80 million. And so that's where a lot of projects kind of fall through the wayside through no fault of the project. It just somehow it didn't all come together.
All right. 297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. In our remaining time with Attica Locke, the author of The Cutting Season, tonight at the Manship Theater, she'll be honored for her book as the Ernest Gaines Literary winner for this year. Sherry asks about the recent dust-up with Ani DeFranco. So you're laughing. You know about this.
I do, and I heard about it because people referenced my book. Ani DeFranco is a feminist songwriter and thinker who was hosting a feminist songwriting retreat, a workshop where people could pay and come and learn with her. And she was going to host it, I believe, on the Nottoway Plantation.
Correct.
And missed the irony completely that how in the heck, I almost said something else.
That's all right.
Are you going to sit on a plantation and talk about distribution of power from a gender point of view and leave out race? And then she slickly tried to suggest that she had intended some kind of great emotional talk about it, while also saying that she didn't pick the venue. And you can't quite have it both ways, that the venue was a second thought, but yes, we were also going to have a big talk about race. You really can't have it both ways. She has since apologized, but she also canceled the whole event, which I thought was petulant. I thought that was silly. You don't need to punish for your bad judgment. Don't punish people who want to learn to write songs with you. You know, just move the venue.
Move the venue.
Yeah, that, but it's, and some of this is not her fault. This is what happens. Remember when the Republicans sat down, sorry, Louisiana, I'm going to say it, and they were going to have a conversation about how they were going to attract minority voters, and they held it on a plantation in Virginia? Tone deaf as all get out. How are you missing that? But when you set up and let these places, when these plantations make a choice to rent themselves out like a banquet hall, people are going to get in trouble.
Well, in this community, we still have all-white country clubs.
Wait, what?
We do in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We have all-white neighborhoods, some around Louisiana State University.
But by deed restrictions, or just they just de facto are all-white?
De facto.
Mm-hmm.
And there is material in deeds that reflects that you cannot sell.
I have to say, if you have an all-white country club in 2014, I don't want to be in that club. If you've held out with those beliefs till 2014, those are probably some people I don't want to play golf with.
You don't want to play golf with?
No.
Or tennis. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757 for our guest, Attica Locke, who will be in all her splendor tonight. You can tell she is a lively person. Sometimes writers are not. We had one of the Ernest Gaines recipients on this show, very nice young man a few years ago, and he was obviously uncomfortable with this. You're getting right in there.
No, I don't have a problem with
that. Anthony on Government Street. Anthony, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment about race in Louisiana, that in South Louisiana, I live in Baton Rouge, that it is kind of glossed over and people don't really talk about the issue of race relations in our state. Like you said, there are a lot of segregated communities by design still in the state, and no one really talks about it. So that's why we have a lot of the problems that we do have here.
Okay. So we're putting blinders on. Is that what you're saying, Anthony?
Yeah, that's what I think. And I also wanted to make a comment on the plantation weddings. My wife and I, we had a wedding at a antebellum home. It wasn't a plantation, but we're both African-American, and we kind of saw it as our ancestors did the work to make that plantation or make those homes stand. So it was kind of like a conquering moment for us and our families.
That's beautiful. I understand that.
Dominic in Grand Coteau. Hi, Dominic. You're on the air.
Good morning. Congratulations, Attica, on
Thank
your
you.
Award.
Thank you.
I'm in Lafayette, where Ernest Gaines teaches, or at least taught at the campus here. But anyway, this thing about Ani DeFranco and stuff, I'm wondering how much of that she did or didn't know. But, you know, when they do these kind of things and they set it up, is it sending subliminal messages somewhere else? Maybe another community that would kind of gloat over this, you know, kind of like a setup.
What I understood is that she did not pick the place, but she was told about it well in advance, and that she said to herself, "Whoa," and then went ahead and just decided to have the workshop anyway.
No. You're familiar with Todd Rundgren?
No.
Singer?
Yes, I am. Singer. Yes.
Hello, it's me. He had an event there last year called it the Todd Fest.
He's
a California guy, too. Marsha in Clinton. Marsha, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Fine.
I just wanted to make a comment as someone who has lived in Louisiana her almost entire life and who was born in Biloxi. Many of these homes that are in the South are now open to the public because that's the only way the owners seem to be able to afford them. It's just like the great houses in England. When you go over there and tour all those castles and those big houses, they don't take you on a tour to see the tenant farmers' homes or the little villages and cottages. They mainly concentrate on you looking at the large house with all the grandeur and the historic stuff in it. And I don't think that the southern plantations purposely set out now to ignore the slavery aspect or the enslaved aspect.
All right.
Yeah, yes, they have, at least in the past. Oak Alley, because I did a lot of research on them, they clearly said in years past, we are not interested in telling that particular story. They want it to be about the house. They are now trying, they're rebuilding the slave cabins. They're trying to broaden their narrative. What I would hope is that each of these places could get some kind of state or federal support so that it wasn't incumbent on just the family that owns it to hold it up, because then you do have to have weddings. But if this was a national treasure in the sense that it could get some state funding, then we could protect these spaces for future generations.
All right, quickly, Tracy and Gonzalez, very quickly.
Why don't we label all Japanese cars? These cars were made by a country that bombed the United States along with German cars. The past is the past.
That's a sentiment that I'm sure more than a few people have, and I'm glad, even though most of us wouldn't agree, or at least many of us wouldn't, that our guest or our caller expressed it. And congratulations on your fine work, Attica.
Thank you.
Appropriately, Attica will be celebrated tonight at the Manship Theater as the Ernest Gaines recipient, the literary award for this year.
Thank you guys for having me.
And thank you for listening, everybody, and stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.